This episode of The Witch Wave is brought to you by Wheel of Fate in Edinburgh, Scotland. At Wheel of Fate Witch Shop, you can learn to make your own besom broom, bind a spellbook, or spin wool into yarn. There you can find local art inspired by heritage crafts, the natural world, and regional myths and folklore. At Wheel of Fate, they believe that there is magic in the creative arts, and they want to share that magic with you. Visit wheeloffate.co.uk to book a workshop or to learn more about their new location. Hey there. So people are always asking me how they can get more Witch Wave, how they can work with me, how they can find magical community. And my answer is join the Witch Wave Patreon. There is where you'll get bi-weekly bonus Witch Wave Plus episodes, as well as ad-free Witch Wave episodes and detailed show notes for all. The Witch Wave Patreon is also where I lead a monthly online magical ritual, which you can attend live or watch the recording of at your convenience. And that's available for members at all tiers. And then rewards for some other tiers also include magical merch and contests where you can win witchly prizes, as well as getting early heads up about my workshops before they sell out, and opportunities to get magical one-on-one guidance from me. And all backers get access to our exclusive digital coven, where you can connect to a community of other wonderful Witch Wave witches around the world. So head on over to patreon.com/witchwave and sign up. It's a marvelous way to get more magic in your life and to support the show. Thank you so much.
The world is filled with bewitching people, and you might be one too. Welcome to the podcast where art is magic, magic is real, and reality is stranger than dreams. I'm Pam Grossman, and this is The Witch Wave.
Hello, and welcome to the Witch Wave. Ooh, magic is in the air. Do you feel it? The energy is shifting, and so much is going on. I hope you are well. I myself had a magical week last week. On Thursday night, we got to see the opening of the Rocky Horror Show on Broadway. It is so sublime. I know I've talked about it a lot already. I imagine I'll keep talking about it in coming episodes. But for the time being, let me just say, I think it's a masterpiece. It is steeped in magic and artistry and joy and silliness and sexiness and radical love. And I think you're going to adore it. I certainly did. And then the next night, if you can believe it, I got to see Florence and the Machine. And this was actually my first time seeing Florence perform. She was as incredible, nay, more incredible than I even expected. And I got to go because I did the littlest smidge of consulting for the visual aspects of like some of her merch and things that I think were going to be in the stage show and then maybe made it into other parts of the tour. I don't know. This was all through my friendship with Nick of Thunderwing Studios, who did the Witch Wave logo and who designed the Library of Esoterica books. Nick and his team at Thunderwing are just like the most sublime designers. You would have heard Nick on an episode with Jessica Hundley, the editor of the Library of Esoterica books. Gosh, that would have been a couple years back when our witchcraft volume came out, which we all worked on together. So that's why I was at the Florence show. Alas, I did not meet Florence. I did not work directly with Florence. I don't want to overstate my involvement, but hey, let's manifest Florence coming on the Witch Wave someday. That, of course, would be a dream. Now, speaking of dreaminess, this Thursday, April 30th, that's tomorrow if you're listening to this episode when it drops, I will be co-leading an online Hexenacht ritual workshop with Jonica Stuckey, and this is our Beltane Eve celebration. Hexenacht, or Beltane Eve, is also known as Witch's Night, or Walpurgis Night, or Walpurgis Nacht, and whatever you call it, it's going to be delish. We will be delving into the magic of witches and fairies and fire, and we will also be invoking Hecate, the Greek goddess of witchcraft. You don't want to miss this one. Tickets are available now at pamgrossman.com/events or via the link in my Instagram bio at Phantasmophile. And yes, as ever, this will be recorded if you can't make it live, so do sign up now. It is going to be dreamy. And of course, Beltane itself, the next day, is a dreamy holiday. It makes me think of Midsummer Night's Dream, even though it's not a midsummer holiday. It is a holiday full of fairies and fire and witchcraft. And this year, it falls on a full moon in Scorpio. This is also the flower moon. And so it's a very flowery, dark, deep holiday always, but it doesn't always fall on this full moon, so it's going to be extra, extra potent. And of course, Beltane is also May Day, which is also International Worker Day, where we celebrate the labor movement and the working class. And there's a call for a general strike this year to protest the ways in which this government has been privileging the rights of billionaires over the rights of the working class. So if you are able to withhold your labor, your dollars, your participation in the standard economic structures, then please do so. And yes, also light your Beltane bonfire. But also, if you can, consider showing up at a protest or doing some other act of resistance that uses your specific style of magic making. We need it now more than ever. And this Beltane on the full moon in Scorpio, come on, talk about supercharged. Now, speaking further of dreaminess, today's episode is all about dreams. And I get to talk to Fiona Cook, who is the author of The Dream Atlas, an interactive guide to dream work. And as I told Fiona, ever since I read her book, my dreams have been so extra vivid. My gods. And at the beginning of our talk, you'll hear me say that I might tell her a dream I had recently, but then the conversation goes elsewhere, and that happens. You know, I really follow the energy and my own intuition in terms of where the conversations go when I'm doing these interviews. But the dream that I was referring to was so potent that I feel compelled to share it with you now here. And it's a little vulnerable, but we are in the circle of magic and the circle of trust, so here we go. In this dream, I'm attending some kind of event. I was dressed up, there was food and music, and a long table filled with women. Now, I didn't recognize these women, but in the dream, I sensed that they were people I knew somehow, people who were watching me, who knew me. And so I had an awareness of this table of women. And so they're all sitting together at this banquet table, but I'm on the dance floor. I mean, that's usually where you'll find me at these sort of parties anyway. But in this dream, I'm dancing. But what is different than usual is that in this dream, I am dancing with one Mayor Zohran Mamdani. Yup. And look, we're having a lovely time. You know the mayor's got moves. We've all seen them. We've seen his rap videos. You know he's got rhythm. And so we're moving, we're grooving, we're having fun. But then Mayor Mamdani puts his hand on my hip and draws me a little bit closer. And I know what you're thinking, but in the dream, I immediately feel self-conscious, like, oh no, everyone at the table is watching. All those women are looking and judging. And so I gently remove his hand, but not because I wasn't having fun or because he was being fresh. He wasn't like putting on, you know, inappropriate moves in the dream. You know, he was just dancing as people dance. But I remove his hand from my hip because I was worried about how it would look. I was worried about the optics of the situation. I was worried about the optics for him. Like, what if people see Mayor Mamdani dancing with me, a known witch, and then I wake up? Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, Pam obviously has the hots for the mayor. And look, he's a handsome, charming man. I will not deny it. But what I really love about him are his policies and his character. I'm just a big fan of the work he's doing and of how he shows up in the world, how he shows up for New York. And as I've mentioned many times on and off this show, I'm a big supporter of his. And to be honest, I've been trying to figure out ways to support him even more and ways to support his administration more actively. And I've been weighing different ways to maybe reach out or different things that I could do. But I confess, and I'm not proud of this, but I'm just being honest with you, I sometimes worry that having a known witch supporting him more publicly would bring negative attention to him, would somehow hurt him politically and give people more fodder for hating him. And he's already contending with so much Islamophobia and bigotry that I don't know if aligning with a practitioner of witchcraft would be in his best interest, or at least I worry about that sometimes when I'm, you know, feeling insecure and probably overthinking the situation. Now, I don't have any answers yet or any big next steps or anything, but these are the questions that my psyche is contending with in my dream life, certainly, and also in my waking life. And these are some of my fears sometimes. These are the anxieties that my psyche seemed and seems to be working through, especially when I was dreaming that night. And later that week, Matt and I happened to be having dinner with one of our dear friends who is a state representative in Georgia. And I actually told her about my dream and told her how I want to get more politically involved, but I want to make sure what I'm doing is additive and not distracting or, you know, not bringing harm or negative attention to the causes that I care about. And what she told me is that just by being myself and showing up in the world the way I already am, as a creative, loving, politically engaged witch who speaks to my audience about the mayor and his policies and about all the other things I care about in politics, that is already helping him and is already helping the causes that I am so invested in. I don't necessarily need to do more than I already am, in other words. Now, maybe she's right, maybe she's wrong, and there's more I
can be doing and will be doing. These are questions I'm currently sorting through as I'm trying to continue to figure out how to best apply my magic and my gifts to making the world a better place, especially at this crucial juncture in time when it seems like so many things are crumbling and so many things have an opportunity to be built in better, more beautiful, more radically imaginative and loving ways. But no matter what the results are, this is a dream I keep thinking about, and I imagine more will reveal itself to me about this dream's message in the coming days, weeks, months. Now, I will also say that Uranus has entered Gemini, which all of the astrologers are saying is going to be a time of personal and collective revolution, no matter what your chart looks like. This is a 7-year cycle that we've just entered, and you can listen to more about it on the Aliza Kelly episode, which aired at the beginning of this year. But I happen to be a Gemini rising. Just to refresh you, I'm an Aquarius sun, Gemini rising, Cancer moon. And so all of the astrologers are also saying that for Gemini rising folks like me, this is the start of a 7-year era of profound transformation around identity and how we show up in the world. And it's apparently supposed to be a lot about just like giving so many fewer fucks about how people are judging us and perceiving us, which is an interesting ingredient in this dream elixir too. So who knows? Maybe I'm meant to shed all of that self-consciousness and fear of optics about what other people might think and be even more wild and witchy than I already am. Maybe I'm meant to be the first pagan president. Can you imagine? Okay, I have zero desire to run for office, so don't get excited. But anyway, I'm allowing this dream to breathe and unfold and reveal more of myself to myself. Maybe I'll have a follow-up dream which shows me and Zoran continuing to dance anyway. Or hell, maybe there's a dream in which we go on to win Dances with the Stars. Who knows? Time and my psyche and the dream gods, Oniris and Hypnos, will tell. Watch this dream space. And stay tuned for my dreamy conversation with Atlas of Dreams author Fiona Cook. But before we get to that, first let's check and see what's come through on the Witch Wire.
Who is it?
Witches.
All right, I'm actually going to do something a little bit different for today's Witchwire, and I'm going to reply to a video that several of you forwarded to me via DM on Instagram, and I'll play you a clip from it. But just to set this up, it was recently announced a couple days ago that a dude named Hung Cao is now the acting secretary of the Navy. And like most of this administration's selections, Hung Cao holds some truly ignorant and vile opinions. He's said things like the military needs, quote, alpha males and alpha females who are going to rip out their own guts, eat them, and ask for seconds. Cool. He's also unsurprisingly not a fan of drag queens and, relevant to our interests, not a fan of witches. So here's what he said about that on a conservative talk show during his Senate campaign against Virginia Senator Tim Kaine.
There's a place in Monterey, California called Lover's Point.
Yeah.
The original name was Lovers of Christ Point, but now it's become, they took out the Christ, it's Lover's Point, and it's really, Monterey is a very dark place now.
Yeah.
A lot of witchcraft and the Wiccan community has really taken over there. And we can't let that happen in Virginia.
Okay, so first, I want to emphasize that this clip is not from this year. Once again, it's from when he was running for senator in 2023. So this is while he was on the campaign trail. And that campaign was ultimately a failure because he lost to Tim Kaine in 2024. And let's also be clear, his prior run for U.S. Rep of Virginia in 2022 was also a failure as he lost to Jennifer Wexton. But yes, like many people in this administration, Hung Cao has managed to fail upward and is now, yes, the acting Secretary of the Navy. And am I thrilled about this? Of course not. Do I love that he said disparaging, uninformed, sensationalist crap about witches in 2023? Of course not. Do I love that our Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, is also a far-right Christian nationalist? Of course not. And again, I have no problem with the tenets of Christianity, which are to, you know, love everyone and feed the poor and heal the sick and so on. But I do have a problem with the fundamentalist tilt toward Christian nationalism that is happening in our government because, like our country's founders, I believe in the separation of church and state. And I also believe that what makes America truly great is its diversity. We're talking about dreams on this episode, and I realize that the American dream has been revealed to be a mirage in many, many respects. This country was stolen violently from indigenous people, and it was built on the backs of enslaved Black people who were stolen from their homeland. And this country is still currently organized to benefit the wealthy, the white, and the straight cis man. This is all factual. And yet, I still believe in that American dream of justice, equality, freedom, and opportunity for all. And that means for Muslim people, Jewish people, immigrants, people of color, queer people, trans people, women, non-binary people, and yes, witches. And that's whether you identify as Wiccan or pagan or just as a witch without any further embellishment. And so I do get concerned when I hear public servants spreading misinformation and slander about the witchcraft community. Of course I do. And it's something I take note of and will continue to monitor. However, I am currently far more concerned with protecting people who are actively being harmed and legislated against right now. And those people are trans folks. Those people are immigrants. Those people are pregnant folks who can't get access to the reproductive health care they need. And the list goes on and on. So I don't blame you for feeling alarmed when these kinds of anti-witch stories and clips surface. I don't love it myself. But let's all just take a deep breath and recommit to protecting ourselves and each other and to staying aware. But then let's also be sure to take that fear of what could be and transmute it into love for those who are already under siege in this moment. To that end, I've been doing a fundraiser on Instagram for Trans Lifeline, and I hope you will join me in donating money to them. There's a link in my Instagram bio for that. But whatever you do, let's do it in the name of making that American dream of universal parity a reality. Let's not let soundbites and sensationalism and clickbait stir us up and make us feel so afraid that we hide or disengage and don't actually help the people who actively need it now. That's what the conservative right, that's what the authoritarians, that's what the fascists want us to do. They want us to feel afraid. Please don't give in to it. Please continue to dream bigger and to act braver. Now, on to my guest. Fiona Cook is the author of The Dream Atlas, an interactive guide to dream work, which is illustrated by Kathleen Neely and is a year-long workbook to help you deepen your relationship to your dreams. And it is chock full of dreamy exercises, rituals, mythology, and history. And it is so good. Fiona's debut book, The Wheel of the Year, An Illustrated Guide to Nature's Rhythms, which was illustrated by Jessica Rue, was a New York Times bestseller and a Kirkus Best Books of 2023 for middle grade. And you know I loved seeing a Wheel of the Year book on the New York Times bestseller list. Yes. Fiona is inspired by the magic, mystery, and mischief of our planet Earth and draws from that relationship with her work. Fiona joined me remotely from her home in Chicago, and you can watch the video of our conversation over on my YouTube channel, which is at Phantasmophile. Fiona Cook, welcome to the Witch Wave.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Pam. It's so nice to meet you and to see you.
It's so nice to meet you and to see you. And I have been having the best time with your new book, The Dream Atlas, An Interactive Guide to Dream Work. And I just have to say, before we really get started, ever since I began reading this book, my dreams have been so intense, like just for the past couple days. So I wanted to ask, before we dive into the meat of the book, while you were writing it, have your dreams been more vivid?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But I think that's part of dream work, or just the magic of dreams, is just the more attention you give them, the more you honor them or even just think about them, the more they give back. So even since researching, my dreams started getting more vivid, but also writing them down and just spending that time with them, really, I think their power multiplies. So it's really cool to hear that it's happened to you.
Yeah, it's been really, really wild. And maybe later I'll share one of the dreams with you. We'll see.
Ooh.
Do you like it when people share dreams with you? Because at one point in the book, you recommend that people maybe want to start sharing their dreams in a group or a club, like just like they might have a book club, they could have a dream club. But you say in the book, like, not everybody likes hearing about other people's dreams. And I totally get that. I feel like often when someone's like, ooh, I had a dream about you, my first thought is like, did we bone? Or else, you know, like, I'm interested in people's dreams, even if I'm not in them. But, you know, sometimes it can be a little boring or it can be a little esoteric. So what is your relationship to when other people tell you about their dreams?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think it depends on the dream. I love when you're close with somebody and they tell you a dream and you can kind of crack it. Like, you see, oh, that's so obvious. That's what that means. Or they can do that for you. And I think that's really so wonderful and exciting. But yeah, sometimes you hear somebody else's dream. And if you keep a dream journal, reading over your own dreams, you're like, I don't know if there's too much substance there. You know, a dream is kind of like a poem or like a work of art. Like, there's a lot of layers there. There's a lot of symbolism. And trying to get to the bottom of it is an endeavor. And so, I mean, I love dreams. I'm really fascinated by them. Sometimes the meaning is very apparent, but not necessarily even to the dreamer. And sometimes there's a lot more that you have to dig deep to access.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, I don't know what's going on there. I think that's just a processing dream.
Yes, yes. Okay. You just used a phrase, processing dream.
And one of the things I love about this book is you talk about the different categories of dreams. And I guess I never really thought about the fact that there really are different types of dreams. And people have been writing about that for hundreds of years. So can you go over some of the types of dreams? You just used that phrase, a processing dream. What is that exactly? And how does that differ from some of the other types of dreams?
Yeah, so processing dream is just kind of the dream that's filled with like the things that you would do on a mundane level. Maybe there's not too much significant meaning underneath that. Although, you know, you scratch at the surface and sometimes even underneath those dreams, it seemed like, oh, I was just washing the dishes. There might be something more under that. But through my research and in the book, I kind of explore like how different cultures historically have understood dreams. And for much of human history, the relationship with dreams is that they are a source of guidance. And that guidance comes from your own internal wisdom or something divine or, you know, more spiritual or magical. There are, you know, sometimes huge, profound messages that you can get from dreams, but that's not what you're going to be dreaming every night and getting some, you know, deep guidance of what to do or where to go. But even the kind of more mundane dreams can maybe have some insight into your life or where you are. And there's different kinds of dreams, but there's also different ways of looking at dreams, different ways of framing them. Like, am I going to decode the symbolism behind my dreams? Sometimes a dream is just a message like, go here, or an affirmation that you're doing something right or that you're doing something wrong. Not wrong, but you know, like there's a warning in your dreams.
Yes.
And so that's a very ancient kind of reason that people use their dreams is to kind of use them as a map.
Yeah.
Or as wisdom. Yeah.
I love that you use the word map because this is the dream atlas. That's how you titled the book.
Yeah.
Can you talk about kind of the cartography of dreams? Like, why did you want to write a book that felt like an atlas?
Well, I really wanted it to be an exploration and the sense of play, the dream work, and like, how you started conversation, you're just reading it, you started to remember your dreams more. You know, everybody dreams every night, but it's just remembering that. That's sometimes harder for people accessing what's happening in this whole other world that you enter, this realm really, that you enter when you sleep. So I really wanted something for myself before I started writing and researching it or anything. I had wanted to connect more deeply with my dreams. I wanted to play with them and have that kind of relationship. I didn't really find something as interactive as I wanted, kind of like a workbook. So that was kind of what inspired me to make one. And kind of working with my own dreams, just that sense of exploring in a kind of methodical way, charting where you are and what you learn from your experience, trying different things, getting a little lost, coming back and rerouting. And of course, there's just the water emotional element of dreams. There's so much depth and mystery to them. And so they're a very watery experience.
Yes, it's so true. And you even start the book kind of calling us Onironauts.
Yeah.
Oniris, the god of dreams, and not meaning sailor. And so
yeah.
I love how you set up that framework. Like, we're going to go on this journey across, I don't know, the great ocean of dreams, if you will. It's so evocative and so beautiful.
Yeah, because dreams are personal in a lot of ways, but you know, they connect you as well. There's a collective element to it. It's like magic or like art in a lot of ways, where it's this way to find connection with a greater sense, to kind of relate yourself to like a greater whole, something bigger than you, because it's the very like Western, like psychotherapy idea that dreams just come from within, and then the kind of more belief that they come from without, that they're like divine wisdom. But it doesn't have to be an either or anyway. Like, we have that divine in us anyway, you know, to my belief. And so like, we have that. So it's just one of many ways that we connect to a greater sense of the universe.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so true. You know, people often ask me that about like gods and goddesses or about magic. Like, is this all just coming from inside of us, or is it this external force or these external beings? And I'm like, I don't know that it really matters. It feels almost like too small or literal of a question, because we're talking about
mythopoiesis and the imaginal realm, which is very real because it has real world material effects. And yet the way we engage with it is through our imagination, our unconscious, through symbolism, through story, through myth, through metaphor, through art. And so I agree with you. It doesn't have to be either or. Do you have a sense of any of your dreams having changed the pattern of your life? Or have you ever had any of these, what you write in the book, you call them big dreams in your own life?
I haven't personally had like a super big dream that, you know, changed my destiny per se, but actually my partner did. So that kind of guided him to me.
Can you share his dream, Fiona? Are you allowed?
Oh, yes, I am allowed. But it's with a whole series of dreams and I can't do it justice for his story. But basically, he woke up one morning during a time of transition. People often have like more intense dreams during times of transition. You know, that's what's reported. And he had a dream that basically told him to go to Occupy Chicago. It was, you know, during 2011 and there were a lot of protests throughout the country and the world. But Occupy Chicago was a longstanding protest where people were staying the night there.
Yeah, we had Occupy Wall Street here in New York. So,
yeah, of course. And so he had that dream that kind of directed him there. And I had been going there after work with my friend. And so we met there. But it was just one of those funny things, too, where I had written like a list kind of like what I'm seeking in a partner. And then he was kind of sent there, directed there. So I kind of had that like feeling of destiny or fated feeling to it.
Magic. Absolute magic.
Yes.
Oh, I love that, Fiona. That's so cool.
Yeah.
You know, some people think of spells that we cast as like going out into the universe or the unified field or whatever it is. But I love the idea of maybe your spell that you cast finding him in a dream and then leading him to you through the realm of dreams. That's so beautiful.
Yeah, it definitely felt like that. So I have never had a directed dream like that. I've had other dreams that are definitely kind of uncanny. And, you know, I've had few experiences with dreams and other people. Like when my dad died, he died kind of tragically. He overdosed.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So when he died, his spirit was very
unsettled.
I, as his daughter, could still feel it. And through my dreams, I was still connecting with him, but it wasn't exactly a visitation dream, which I kind of do talk a little bit in the book about visitation dreams, which are visits from the dead, where it's actually them. It was like that, but I felt like I was doing this work of kind of filtering where his soul was. It was very agitated. That was the description that came to me at the time. I was like, I'm filtering. And it was kind of like this work that my dreams, because dreams do a lot of work for you. I mean, you're participating, you're there, but the deepest work comes when you like are just present. You show up, you're sleeping, and your dreams are doing this work, but you're not necessarily like, okay, what's the next step?
Yeah.
Being present.
When you're surrendering to them almost.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Surrendering to that.
Can you say more about the filtering? What do you mean that your dream was filtering? I don't quite know how that felt.
It felt like the troubles that he left this plane with, that his soul was still very troubled and that he was trying to let go of some things. And it was heavy, but grief is heavy. It's kind of like when you have a loved one who's in great distress and you're just listening to them and that helps them process, just for them just to talk. And you just being there, you don't have to give them advice. You don't have to give them anything more than just being present and really deeply listening. It was kind of like a deeper soul level of that is what it felt like.
Oh, that's so gorgeous. So it's almost like you were helping him metabolize some of his pain or move through it. I really find that to be so intriguing because usually when people talk about these visitation dreams, it's like our great grandmother comes or our grandmother comes or our father comes and they are healing us or fortifying us. But this feels like you were doing something for him, which I imagine also perhaps helped heal you a bit too. Is that true?
Yeah, that is true. And you know what? I hadn't really exactly explored that, but that is exactly right. Like it did help me too. It did feel like a labor at the time, but that I was willing to do. It was my father who I really loved.
Yeah.
you're right. It did help me as well. Mm. It certainly did.
That's so profound.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. This episode of The Witch Wave is brought to you by Blessed Be Magic Jewelry. I've been noticing something lately, especially in the conversations we have here on The Witch Wave, which is that so many of you are drawn to magic that's subtle, magic that's intentional, integrated into daily life, and deeply personal. And that's why I want to share Blessed Be Magic. They craft minimalist, elevated jewelry for modern witches. These are beautiful pieces inspired by powerful symbolism made to be worn every day. Think witchcraft and goddess charms, talismans, and sacred symbols that feel quietly powerful. Not costumey, not loud, just intentional. And I think listeners here on The Witch Wave will really appreciate that because so much of what we explore on this show is about weaving magic into the ordinary, into our creativity, and into living with purpose and presence. And Blessed Be Magic's jewelry really supports that way of living. And what also stands out to me is how the witchcraft community raves about their pieces. They have over 3,000 five-star reviews, and again, witches say that these are the pieces they never take off. Jewelry they wear to ritual, to work, and everywhere in between. You can visit blessedbemagic.com to explore jewelry made to honor your path. That's Blessed Be Magic, spelled MAGIC.com, and use code WITCHWAVE for 15% off your first order. The Witch Wave is brought to you by BetterHelp. Are you feeling anxious about money right now? Between tax season and the state of the economy overall, I would not blame you. And I'm here to tell you that financial stress can absolutely affect every area of our lives. When I first left my day job to become a full-time writer, podcaster, witch person, I can tell you that as exciting as it was, it also brought me incredible anxiety because I was shifting from a steady paycheck to becoming self-employed and relying on the ebbs and flows of going into business for myself. And I lost a lot of sleep over it, and it affected my mood at times. And let me just say, I'm so glad that I had a therapist to talk it all through with. Because our feelings about money are never just about money. They're also about our feelings of stability and security and self-worth. And they're also about the messages that we received from our families about money and how we feel about our place in the world overall. Joseph Campbell once called money congealed energy. And taking the time to explore our relationship with that energy is crucial. Now, going to therapy is not about getting financial advice. It is about managing the stress, shame, or anxiety that can come with the topic of our finances. Therapy can help people unpack their relationship with money, build healthier coping strategies, and feel less alone in the process. And BetterHelp Online Therapy is a way for you to connect to a great therapist who can support these types of conversations. And it's super easy to get started. All you have to do is fill out a short questionnaire that helps identify your needs and preferences, and then BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. And they have an industry-leading match fulfillment rate, which means they typically match you with the right therapist the first time. But if you aren't happy with your match, you can absolutely switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations. And BetterHelp also has an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for live sessions based on over 1.7 million client reviews.
When life feels overwhelming, therapy can help. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/witchwave. That's betterhelp.com/witchwave. Welcome back to the Witch Wave.
I want to talk about the structure of this book and just get into the nitty-gritty of like how somebody might work with it. You used the word workbook earlier, and I loved the way you structured it and the way that you suggest people follow like the cadence of the moon with it. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. You dream at night mostly, unless you're on a reverse schedule for work or whatever reason. But for the most part, people dream at night, and working with the moon seemed kind of intuitive. You know, the moon has these ebbs and flows the way that water does, and dreams seem to as well. I also just wanted it to be pretty structured, but also the night sky for navigation was like an apt structure.
Yes, for us Onironauts.
Yeah. I wanted it to be, you know, pretty systematic because dreams are so loose and they're so amorphous, and it's so beautiful how one thing can shift into another. But you also want some kind of structure when you're, or at least I do, I'm a Virgo. So I like to have some kind of structure and pattern.
Yep, that tracks.
Yeah. And so I had all these different kind of areas or realms that I wanted to kind of explore or encourage people to explore. So there's 13 cycles. Well, there's 12 cycles because, you know, in a year, there's 12 moons. Sometimes there's 13 moons. So the 13th cycle is an extra cycle. It's like the blue moon. And that one's collaborative dreaming to kind of work with others, either a partner or multiple partners, to just play with dreams in a different kind of way or explore your dreams together. But for the most part, it's rather solitary pursuit. And the exercises build on each other. Each week has a topic to explore, starting with a new moon, then going into the waxing. The full moon is kind of like the more bigger explorations, like a dream ritual or making something bigger, like maybe intentionally trying to conjure something influential for yourself in your dreams, and then a waning moon. So it goes by month. So it's a year of dreaming.
Oh, beautiful. And I want people to know, like, this is so impeccably researched. And as a research witch myself, I appreciate that and can recognize it when I meet another research witch, because I feel like some workbooks would just give you exercises and activities. But this book is so full of information, history, facts. I mean, you are citing all of these different dream deities and myths and practices from around the world. So it's incredibly eclectic and international and inclusive, which I always appreciate. And I just learned so much. What section was like the most interesting or the most fun for you to research?
Oh, well, thank you so much for that. First of all, my other book, Wheel of the Year, I really love the specifics of different cultures that, you know, it's like when you're writing, it's the specifics that make something that you really relate to. So it's like there's specifics, but it's also connective. So I just liked to see the different patterns that are universal, but then, you know, there's specifics within that that are so cool to me. But I really did love researching the deities and just like kind of like visualize like how people visualize dreams as an entity.
Yes. You read my mind. That was my favorite part too, of course.
Yeah. Even going into the book, the idea that I always keep coming to is that dreams are your friend. There's a power that you can turn to. Of course, you can have nightmares and they can be frightening and disturbing, very unsettling. But even that, when they're troubled, they're still trying to teach you something, or you can kind of relate to it how you might relate to somebody troubled in your life.
Yeah. It can be very instructive or very illuminating.
Yeah. It's just really cool to me that, like, historically for so long and still, but a lot of things have been broken off a little bit, you know, after rationalism, but it connects people, individuals to each other and the sense of community. It's a part of what makes us human, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
It's a part of what makes us alive and have a soul, is what I mean.
Ah, yes, exactly. Let's talk about some of those dream deities. I hesitate to bring this into our chat because the creator of this text that I'm about to bring up has recently been revealed to be pretty monstrous, which is heartbreaking for me because he was a real hero of mine. But I grew up reading Sandman comics. I don't know if you read Sandman. Mm-hmm. And the lead deity is Morpheus, the king of dreams. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to talk about the creator of this comic series because if I start, I won't stop. Yeah. And I don't want to derail us.
No.
But I will say that that was my earliest experience as a teenager of engaging with a notion that there even were dream deities or a dream deity. And of course, Morpheus is drawing from Greek myth.
Yeah.
Who are some of the other deities that someone who is engaging in dream work might want to invoke or call in?
Well, so Morpheus is, you know, like a deity of dreams from ancient Greece. And then a lot of times cultures will have maybe more dream spirits rather than like a big deity, like who's in charge of a realm. Like a lot of cultures have household spirits that kind of like influence dreams.
Mm.
So you have the Nissa in Scandinavian. And then there's also kind of more the ancestors,
yes,
which are not exactly deities, but they connect you to the deities. So like a lot of times dreams are kind of more of a psychopomp, even understood in like some African cultures or other cultures, that the dreams are bringing you to the dream realm, which is often connected with the realm of the dead as well. So to the gods that are not necessarily overseeing dreams specifically, that's one of many jobs.
That's so interesting that the dream realm and the realm of the dead are connected in so many mythic corpuses. Why do you think that is?
I think that it's kind of the mystery, the sense of the unknown and kind of the shadow. And that, you know, the dead still exist to us in dreams. And so we're kind of brought to them, or they come to us. And it's a little bit closer to the divine or the supernatural than the mundane world.
Yeah. It also strikes me, and this is just occurring to me now as we're talking, that like both of these realms transcend linear time.
Yeah.
The world of the dead, whether it's Hades, the underworld, heaven, whatever words we want to use, and the dream realm, these are all transcendent of like time and space as we understand them here on Earth.
Exactly.
So maybe it's the same realm. I don't know. I mean, none of us actually know, but I find that to be like a really evocative thing to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Me too.
So when someone is starting to use your book, how do you recommend they prepare? I mean, there's certainly like a list of materials that you recommend. One, of course, is a dream journal, or you also use the phrase night book, which I love. What else should people have by their bedside or in their bedroom that can get them ready for some deep dreams?
Well, I think the first thing is just the intention. That's what's going to help you the most. Even having this willingness and say, okay, I'm interested in remembering my dreams more, I'm interested in gaining more wisdom from my dreams or insight. I think having that is the biggest step, and then just, you know, paying attention to them. But then taking that a little further, if you want to just make a nice cozy zone for yourself, okay, I'm sleeping, I'm going to honor my dreams and give them some attention. And that goes really far. But then, yeah, in the book, I talk about, you know, adding a little bit more ritual to it. You can bring a candle, or you can meditate, take some deep breaths, writing a dream intention about what you want to dream about, or just that you want to remember your dream is very helpful. And then, yeah, just like if you want to surround yourself with things that kind of evoke a sense of dreaminess, whether that be art or fabric or like a nice smell,
yep,
incense, oil.
Yeah, you talk about certain herbs that are known mm-hmm. to increase people's dreams or help people remember their dreams. And I was familiar with some of them because I studied with the Green Witch, Robin Rose Bennett. And so I've worked very deeply with mugwort or artemisia.
Yeah.
What are some other herbs that you recommend that people either drink or have in a sachet or, I don't know, eat?
Yeah. Mugwort is the queen of the herbs, and she is really good for helping dreams be more vivid and more memorable.
And she can be intense. We should warn people. She can be intense.
Yes.
And also, like, I should say, for all of these herbs, obviously, like, check with your doctor, and not all of them are great for sure. If you're pregnant, and all the other disclaimers.
Exactly. Yeah. Mugwort is an emmenagogue, so it does induce your period. It should not be taken by pregnant people, but it is very potent.
Yes.
And then valerian root is another that is really deep in sleep as well as dreams, but is also very intense. You know, chamomile is very soothing. You can have just more like a calm before you sleep. It's not necessarily going to increase the vividness of the dreams, but just having calmness before bed can help encourage gentle or night sleep. So chamomile, lemon balm, peppermint, those are all good.
And lavender too, right? Super peaceful.
Yes.
Yeah.
So either drinking tea or having them, you know, in a sachet near you, or just even having the live plant near you, depending what you want to do.
Ah, I love that so much.
Yeah.
So if someone is going to use this book, you know, clearly they can do lots to prepare themselves. It is a 1-year commitment. I mean, you really do take us through like every moon cycle. You give us different things to contemplate, different exercises, different things to experiment with. Like it goes really deep. Tell me, what do you hope that people will achieve is not the right word here, but experience at the end of the lunar year?
Well, I think that the main thing is just a deepening of respect for dreams, that it's this whole half of yourself, and not just yourself, but, you know, it is this whole side of reality that you get to explore. You know, historically, dreams were honored. And that they have a lot of value and a lot of worth because they encourage a different kind of thinking than the thinking we use in our day to day. But the gifts that they bring can, you know, help you deepen your awareness in your waking life. The boundaries that are diminished in dreams, where like you can become someone else or you can become something else. There's a sense of empathy even in dreams where you experience reality completely differently. And so bringing that into your waking world, you know, it encourages all the things that I believe in, like beauty and connection and like empathy and creativity and thinking in a different way. So it's kind of a balance, you know, you don't want to go completely like have no boundaries, but
right.
I think they have a lot of gifts that can help that are important in these times and just in reality in general.
Yes. And you and I have like a little bit of an overlap between our newest books because there's a small section in my book, Magic Maker, that's about dreams.
Yeah.
And I touch on these different artists and inventors who received some of their ideas or sometimes the whole entire work complete.
Yeah.
In a dream. In my book, I write about, a lot of people know this example, but the melody for Yesterday by Paul McCartney,
yeah.
You know, of the Beatles, of course, came to him in a dream. What are some of your other favorite examples of dream art or dream inventions or dream ideas?
Yeah. Well, I'm a huge fan even before I even began writing this book. I guess part of why I'm so interested in dreams, since I was a kid, been interested in the surrealists. So that's a whole movement that's very
inspiring. Oh, yeah, I know. Yes. Fiona, now we're talking. Those are my girls and boys.
I know.
And they them. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And I think what was so personally appealing to me about the surrealists is the sense of liberation. And that's what dreams can kind of activate, is like this sense that because anything is possible in a dream, it gives you this sense of what it feels like to imagine and create through imagination. So I think, you know, they obviously were so inspired, like dreams were fundamental and surreal being like in the name.
Tell me, who are some of your favorite dreamy surrealists?
Well, I really loved Magic Maker because I know that you also have a fondness and kinship with Leonora Carrington and Remedios Varo.
Yes.
But they are so important to me and their friendship is so important. And I just love their sense of play and fun. And it was just kind of fun seeing the dream experiment they did. Remedios Varo has kind of recipes for specific dreams to incubate, this whole recipe for dreaming you are the king of England.
Yes.
Very elaborate, not necessarily possible to do in the waking realm, but you could certainly dream.
Yes.
Yeah, they used dreams as inspiration. And then it was interesting, like sometimes artists aren't necessarily trying to use their dreams for inspiration, but an idea just comes to them and they wake up and say, oh, wow, that's something. Like Mary Shelley for Frankenstein, she had a dream for that story. And even E.B. White had the story of Stuart Little. He dreamt about a little talking mouse. And so he decided to just expand that dream into, you know, a children's novel. So it's interesting, like, when you are creative, you're kind of open to those channels. And so you receive those ideas. But then it's also, you have to go through the next steps of making it, like bringing it into the waking realm and making it a reality you can share with others.
Yes.
So, yeah.
You just brought up a word that is very evocative to me, which is the word incubation or incubate. And I know there's actually a long history of dream incubation, which is essentially, and my understanding of it was, when I was researching Magic Maker, it's like you would have a question that you wanted asked or a problem you wanted solved or an ailment in your body you were hoping to have healed. And you would set that specific intention and then go to sleep and receive some kind of dreams or messages that would help you. I don't even know why I'm talking in past tense because people can still do this and do this, but...
But it's just, there's a historical thread to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, a few years ago, led this group to all these amazing magical sites throughout the Grecian mainland. And we went to Asclepius's temple. Asclepius is the god of healing, as many people know in Greek mythology. And people would go to this temple when they were sick. And there were all of these, I guess you would call them like dream priests. They were kind of like a mix between doctors and priests. And they would guide people to go to sleep and essentially appeal to the god Asclepius and try to receive messages of healing or diagnoses through their dreams, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because again, that intention, like you're deciding, I need this to change or I want this answer. And so it's the intention also of making the journey, you know, make the pilgrimage and the whole ritual to it. So sometimes the dream would bestow like guidance for what you need to do next. And sometimes just the dream itself would heal somebody or would give them the answer. So it's really cool how dreams have that. They're so powerful. And that's what was the desire to, you were asking about, like, what would somebody hope to get out of a year of dreaming? Well, it's like using it as a wars, like opening yourself up to the possibility of, you know, what you can dream of can become a reality in the waking and just deepen your sense of life.
So splendid.
On that note, we're going to take another quick break and we'll be right back. This episode of The Witch Wave is brought to you by Zoos Incense, who makes some of my favorite incense on earth. I adore the fact that Zoos Incense is an all-natural, handmade product and that all of their ingredients are organic or wild-crafted using whole plants, seeds, roots, woods, tree resins, and tinctures. Zoos has several incense blends currently available, and each one smells like a sacred temple. They also now have monthly incense subscriptions for you incense heads, and these are discounted over their regular prices. Zoos also sometimes collaborates with different artists and craftspeople to make limited edition incense burners, and they also offer charcoal, raw aromatics like frankincense and myrrh, and other incense supplies. Now, I love Zoos Incense so much that I've collaborated with them on my very own Witch Wave Incense Blend, which is inspired by my matron moon goddess, Artemis. It contains such Artemisian ingredients as sandalwood, orris root, myrrh, mugwort, and other lunar herbs, as well as organic ylang-ylang essential oil, and which smells like nectar and ambrosia. The Witch Wave Incense Blend is available exclusively in the Witch Wave shop over at witchwavepodcast.com/shop. So be sure to order your Witch Wave Incense Blend direct from us now. And you can find Zuz's other bewitching incense blends, such as Sun Smoke and Bacchus, on their website, which is zuzincense.com. That's Z-O-U-Z, incense.com. And best of all, promo code WITCHWAVE gets you 10% off of orders from their site. And if you're ordering direct from them, you'll also get free shipping on orders over $60. And this works with the WITCHWAVE promo code too. So go ahead and check them out at zuzincense.com and use promo code WITCHWAVE for 10% off.
Hi, WITCHWAVERS. I know, and you know, you want some Witch Wave merch. And our print-on-demand merch site is now available through Dashery. So if you want to get different variations of our gorgeous Witch Wave logo designed by Thunderwing, or our Witches Are the Future catchphrase designed by Lara Antal, printed on everything from t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, magnets, notebooks, you name it, you can. Shirts come in different styles and fabrics and are available in sizes small through 5XL, so you can order whatever you'll feel you're most comfortable and most magical in. So head on over to witchwave.dashery.com. That's witchwave.dashery.com, or you can click the Dashery link in the Witchwave shop over at witchwavepodcast.com/shop. Welcome back to the Witch Wave.
I want to shift a little bit and just touch on your previous book, which is also so gorgeous. This is called The Wheel of the Year. And this is essentially, I think of it as kind of like a sneaky, in the best way, book of getting people to practice pagan witchcraft.
Yeah.
It's a book for, I believe it's for like middle grade level readers, but I found it completely gorgeous and not too juvenile for me. I'm 45 years old and I loved this book and it was a New York Times bestseller. Congratulations. So clearly a lot of people resonated with this book. Can you talk a little bit about that book and what your intentions were and are for it?
Yeah, you're right. It is. It's a little subversive because it is about the Wheel of the Year. It's about connecting with nature. It's about connecting families and children with the magic of nature and the magic inside of a person and teaching children that very important empowerment and sense of connection to not just others, as in their friends and family, but into the aliveness of the universe and of the earth.
And it's super pagan, Fiona. Like, it's super pagan.
Yeah, it is. I think it appeals to some people who might not like the spirituality of it. It's still like, oh, connecting with nature.
Yes.
But, you know, if you're connecting with nature, you see that it is alive. Like these things, you know, there's a spirit. Not everybody, but I think that when you're a child, you're awake and open to the magic of the other things around
yes.
you. And again, that sense of what's possible, imagination, you know, kids' imagination are so huge and anything is possible. Colors are so much brighter and life is so much more vivid. It's kind of almost surreal. And like the surrealists also, of course, were really interested in children's art because that sense of imagination and play.
Yes. And receptivity, just being open.
Yes, exactly. And then I think that there's a lot of hunger for that. You know, sometimes people are disillusioned with kind of institutional religion, but they still want ritual for their families. The Wheel of the Year is nice because it naturally has holidays to celebrate and to build traditions within your own family or your community, but also that does connect historically to every culture across the globe has ways of acknowledging and recognizing summer solstice and winter solstice and the equinoxes and the cross quarter days in between.
Yes.
So it's deeply natural. And you want to share that with children. You want to kind of guide them and show them what's meaningful and what matters and a sense of care and connection. And especially, you know, with all the harm that's being done to our earth and our communities, having a structure and tradition and routine with children that we can do together. It's very comforting.
Super valuable.
And so I think that is what I was trying to bring to Wheel of the Year. And I think that hopefully that's why people kind of resonated with it as
well.
Yes.
And when I called you sneaky, I do not mean to imply you're like duplicitous or anything like that.
I know.
Just as someone who is a witch and who is pagan, when I read this book, I was like, oh, this is like super pagan. Now, you do not have to identify as pagan or a witch to get something out of your book, and you're not like proselytizing in it or evangelizing or anything.
No, I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Like, it's also sneaky in the way that I also like, I talk about mutual aid.
Yes.
And I talk about kind of having a sense of discernment about why certain rules exist and to question rules. So that's another way that I was kind of being sneaky a little bit, because I think it goes with witchcraft, but I think like, you know, the most powerful magic is when it has a sense of connecting to something bigger than you. And I want that sense of autonomy and agency for a child, but also that you're part of something bigger, and the senses of justice, using your voice, the power of the word, using your voice, but also using your voice, not just for self-advocacy, but also like speaking up for others and being present there for others. So
it is so gorgeous. Yeah. I love that book so much. So you just brought up the power of word. And so I'm compelled to ask you about the book you are currently working on, which is called Magic Words. And I understand that it's like very precious when you're in the middle of working on a book. So maybe you don't want to talk about it too much, but can you just give us like a little taste or a little summary of what that book is?
So it's another collaboration with Jessica Rue, who is the illustrator for Wheel of the Year, which I'm so excited to be working with her again.
Oh, she's so talented.
And I should say that also the Dream Atlas is illustrated by Kathleen Neely. And I just love collaborating with someone else, especially such talented people, because the sum is greater than the whole. You're working with somebody else and it just brings out such like
alchemy,
so many deep layers to the work.
Yeah.
But Magic Words, I'm going to be working with Jessica Rue again and with our wonderful editor, Melissa. And I kind of think of it as like an animist prayer book. But again, like, I'm a little sneaky. It doesn't have to people who are like, oh, I'm not pagan or I'm not a witch. Yeah, not a witch. You don't have to, but it's kind of like there are invocations, supplications, kind of prayers throughout different times of the year. So it's also structured on a seasonal structure of Wheel of the Year, the 8 holidays of the Wheel of the Year. But also like seasonally, what are you seeing and what are you evoking? And it's also, I guess in my work, like a common thread is I want these books to be kind of like companions or like a comfort to the reader, especially when I'm writing for children who are growing up in very fraught times.
Yeah.
But I really want to kind of empower children. So the power of using words to conjure something powerful within themselves that, you know, kind of bolsters them and buoys them. And so that is the idea behind Magic Words.
Ah, I cannot wait for that book.
Oh, thank you.
I just want to be like, I see you. I see what you're doing, Fiona. And I admire it so, so deeply, because this stuff doesn't have to be scary. Like, people have been using the magic of dreams and communing with the spirits of nature since the beginning of time. Like, this is a very human, natural thing. And to have a re-enchanted orientation toward the world is something that I think anybody can benefit from, no matter what word you call yourself, right?
Yeah.
So speaking of words, does the word witch resonate with you personally? What is your relationship to that word or that identity?
The word witch absolutely resonates with me. Pagan, maybe not so much, but I tend towards more the word animist for me personally, but very much the sense of magic being very real, something that you can access and practice, and like a sense of a greater awareness and greater connection and having kind of some ability to influence. For me, it's a subtle influence, but it's powerful, and kind of trying to bring enchantment and bring magic into my practice and my life. I'm a mother of 2 kids, and I'm also a home healthcare worker. So I have a lot of like very day-to-day responsibilities, just part-time care worker in the morning. Mm. And then also like involved with my community. But so what I mean is that I have a lot of like these very mundane things that keep me very like structured and in the quote unquote real world.
Mm.
So bringing magic just kind of enhances my ability to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. And I guess my dad was kind of like into Aleister Crowley and kind of more occult magic.
Ooh, cool dad.
Which is always very mysterious to me as a kid because he had books like sigils on it. And like, I don't know, I was like, oh, what is that? So interesting. Yeah. But like kind of also a little like
spooky.
I was always a little like apprehensive about it. And then my mom, like she really brought us into nature, like for going for woods walks and stuff like that. So that was like another side of it. Although she didn't use the word magic or anything like that. But kind of those two, you know, sides helped me find my own path. And I think that really getting into tarot really was my avenue into really the language of magic and the language that seeing that the universe is speaking to you using all these different ways, all these different languages. Tarot is one language and, you know, nature is another way that it can try to talk to you. Dreams is another way it tries to talk to you. All of that is very informs my sense of the magic.
Yes.
And of being a witch.
Ah, yeah. So beautifully said. Did you get any messages or signs that told you that after Wheel of the Year, it was time to focus on dreams? Like what made you sense that that was the next realm you wanted to write about?
Well, I said I didn't have any big dreams like in terms of guidance, but I get a lot of dreams that are affirmations or kind of guidance, like to kind of go this way instead. So during Wheel of the Year and other times I'd get dreams that were, you know, in some ways messages. And I think I just wanted to kind of dive into that a little more deeply and explore that a little bit more. So I even started, I think, researching the Dream Atlas while I was working on Wheel of the Year. And even in Wheel of the Year, there is a section on dream magic. It's just like a page, but it's for children to kind of just, you know, also be like, okay, your dreams have a message for you too. You know, it's for children. So it's not as in depth. Is very gentle, but it is also like you can make a dream pillow and you can use your dreams to imagine your future. Not necessarily even prophecy, but also just like visualizing.
Yes.
The options. Yeah.
Yes. Do you talk to your children about dreams and magic and all of these things?
Yeah, for sure. We live in the city of Chicago, but we live right by a park. And there's a hill in the park. So we go there for all the holidays of the Wheel of the Year just to have, you know, like a family reflection. Their kids are their like their interest waxes and wanes.
How old are they, Fiona?
They're 13 and 11 now.
Mm-hmm.
During the pandemic, we spent a lot of time in the park across the street, you know, trying to find nature within a city environment and trying to connect to that sense of the magic of nature and rituals. So that's where that kind of idea came from originally. That was the food for the project, the soil for the project. But for sure, they are little witches themselves. So,
well, they are so lucky to have you as a mom. And I feel so lucky that I got to talk to you today. Before we go, I know people are going to want to connect with you, connect with your work. How can people link up with you in the material realm? They could obviously meet you in the dream realm, too.
Yeah, we shall see. I'm on Instagram at Fionnula Cook. So if you just search Fiona Cook, you'll find me. I have a website, www.fiona-cook.com. And then I am going to be in Massachusetts for like a mini Dream Atlas tour next month in mid-May. I'm going to be doing an event in South Hadley at the Odyssey Bookshop on May 14th. Anyone wants to come?
How fabulous. I have some family near there. So if stars align, I would love to be there myself. Well, listen, congratulations on the Dream Atlas. It is so beautiful. I have learned so much from it and my dreams are so vivid now. Oh my God. Just thank you so much for sharing all of your dreamy magic with us, Fiona. Thank you so much for being on the Witch Wave.
Thank you, Pam. It's just been so nice to connect with you. And you're such a warm, beautiful person. So thank you so much.
Oh, that's so lovely. And back at you.
That's it for the show. Thank you again to Fiona Cook for sharing her dreamy magic with me. Do you have questions, feedback, need some witchly advice, or just want to share something magical that happened to you recently? Drop us an email or a voice memo over at witchwavepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and you just might make it on the Witch Wire. Please check out the video of my conversation with today's guest and prior guests over at my YouTube channel at Phantasmophile, and please like and subscribe. The Witch Wave is a Phantasmophile production written and produced by me, Pam Grossman. We are 100% independently run and proud of it. This episode was recorded and edited by Josh Wilcox and or Walter Nordquist and myself. Our theme music is the song Hand and Eye by Lycanthia. Our new Witchwave logo was designed by Thunderwing. Special thanks go to Matt Freeman, Laura Antal, and Cece Pascal. Please pick up my books Magic Maker and Waking the Witch, or the Witchcraft volume I co-edited for Tashin's Library of Esoterica series. And if you want more Witchwave, or you would just like to support the show, please join us over on Patreon. That's patreon.com/witchwave. Thank you so much for listening. Witches are the future. I'll catch you next time on The Witch Wave.